Welcome to another podcast by Advancing Women in Leadership. My name is Melissa Hendricks, and I am the Assistant Director and Academic Advisor for our healthcare programs.
And I'm Lori Doyle, and I work in the School of Education as Program Director for our Curriculum and Instruction Program in our Masters of Education. And it's our pleasure to be here with Dr. Carrie Tom and spend some time getting to know her a little bit better. And we hope you enjoyed this opportunity. So without further ado, Carrie, if you would take just a minute or two and describe your role at Concordia and maybe how long you've been in this role.
Okay. I'm so glad to be here this morning. Good morning. I actually have three roles. So my first role, I was hired as an assistant professor of English, and I continue in that role now as full professor, and that was 25 years ago. So this is my 25th year of doing that. I am also assistant dean of the School of Arts and Sciences, and I think that's been about 6 years now. I've served under a number of deans. I guess I could probably count through them. And then my most recent role is Director of General Education, overseeing the core curriculum. And this is my second year of doing that.
Wonderful. Thank you for explaining all the roles and hats that you wear at Concordia. I know all of us here appreciate what you do. Our next question for you is, what is your preferred leadership style, or even some experiences that you've had that have helped advance your leadership walk?
All right. Well, when I came here, I never thought that I would be in leadership beyond the classroom, right? That was where I was very excited about having students in front of me and leading them through literature and helping them in their education and their Christian growth. So it was unexpected, right? As many of these roles are, I think, for faculty. And I started as, Department Chair of Humanities. And that was the first time. I think the thing that I've tried to do in all of my roles is to listen carefully to people, to really hear what they're saying, even if they're not saying it in words, right? That what are they implying? What are their needs behind that? And then also, if there's a dispute, to listen carefully to all sides, right? To try to find what is the truth behind the situation, behind people's perspectives. And I think that's just key to being a good leader is to be a good listener. And I've worked with other leaders, and some of them were good listeners and some were not. And I always really appreciated when I knew I was being heard, and that even if nothing could change, sometimes you ask for something and nothing can change, but that I was being heard seriously. So I think that's just really key and sort of seeing myself as a judge, right? That a judge has to be impartial, that a judge has to listen to all sides and come to the best decision for the people involved.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that perspective. And it's no wonder that you have advanced to some leadership roles on campus. And I'm sure everyone appreciates that leadership style. And it doesn't sound like you have much time to think about different goals for your role because you already have so many, but do you have any other, visions or thoughts for any of your three important roles on campus?
For assistant dean, really that my goal is to be the best assistant I can be, right, to the dean. What does he need done? What does the school need done? Where do I see gaps where I can fill in and make sure that everything is covered in a really positive way? And I think that's good. I don't think an assistant should be like, this is what I want to do and, and sort of ignore the person that you're supposed to be serving, right? For director of GE, I think that's the place where vision is the most important. This is only my second year, and my first year I actually was interim dean, and so I didn't get a lot of time to spend on being director of GE, right? I just checked off any boxes I needed to check off, but as you said, there wasn't a lot of time to do anything, and I did have this extra role of actually being dean for 8 months. So right now I'm just trying to learn as much as possible about our GE curriculum by visiting classes, seeing what's actually going on in the classroom, reading the reports. And I just want to really know it well. I helped create our Enduring Questions and Ideas program. I was in at the beginning. So I do know part of it really well, but I just really want to know all of it. And then I feel like once I know it, then I can say, all right, what needs to be improved still? Where can we add things that that maybe we haven't seen before? So I'm not quite sure what those are yet, but I'm really excited about that possibility.
All right, so we're going to pivot a little bit here and after off of your kind of professional hat a little bit and go more personal. So even though you are not new to Concordia, is there anything that the Concordia family might not know about you? For example, a hidden talent, a hobby, or anything else that you'd like to kind of share?
I have no talents. So it'd be so cool if I did magic tricks or something. And my hobby, you know, I'm an English professor, so my hobby is reading, right? Which is not particularly exciting to talk about. So I was really thinking hard about this. One thing I like to do, I don't do it very often, but I'm sort of obsessed with family photos.
Oh, nice.
And normally I just put them in an album and mark them. And I like to think about the future. So maybe you've had this experience where you find an old family album and you're like, gee, I'd like to know who the people are in this picture, but nobody's marked it, right?
Oh,
so I'm
100%.
Very careful about this is, you know, Uncle Eric, this is so-and-so, so that at least in the future, future family will know who these people were. Every once in a while, if we do a big trip, I like to scrapbook it. I don't scrapbook all the time, but we did a big trip to Seattle and we just came back from Wisconsin this summer and did a big trip. So I really enjoy the scrapbooking. And 1,000 years ago in a high school, I was one of the yearbook editors. And so I learned about layout and that sort of thing. And I still remember a lot of that. And so I try to use that in my scrapbooks.
Your family will certainly appreciate that in the future. I wish that I had spent more time doing that in previous years. So thank you for that encouragement to start now. So our next question will be very easy for you, or maybe it will be very hard for you since you do read so much and you're an English professor, but we would love to know if you have a favorite book and maybe why.
Yes, I get asked this a lot. Who's your favorite author? Who's your favorite book?
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to two books. I have to talk about them in order, but it's not in order, right? Mm-hmm. So the first one is Don Quixote. And I love that book because I just love the character of Don Quixote. He is a middle-aged gentleman who is leading a very boring life and reads all these books of chivalry and is inspired to do something, right? And I think often Don Quixote in the popular imagination is just seen as the crazy man, right? The one who goes after windmills, thinks they're giants. But at the heart of it is he wants to help his neighbor. He wants to right injustice. He wants to save women, you know, damsels in distress. And ultimately, he wants to be able to reward the people around him, his servants. He talks about how he really wants to help Sancho and give him money so he can do something, but he doesn't have these things, right? So being a knight is the way he can do that. And so I just love that. That he's inspired by literature. That's what he does. He reads, and then he goes out and tries to save the world, to be a hero. My second book on the list is Dracula by Bram Stoker, which I think might be a little surprising. Mm-hmm. It's wonderfully written. Again, most people sort of have a popular idea of Dracula, but the book itself is incredibly well written. And I think the other thing people don't know if they haven't read it is that it's actually a very blatantly Christian book. The group of friends who get together to fight Dracula are motivated by faith and by their friendship, by their love of each other. And Van Helsing, right, who's sort of now in the popular imagination become this kind of, you know, the vampire slayer that's a kind of a macho guy, is a little old man, but who is motivated by faith and by his love of science. And so he has both of those things. And that's one of the things that we try to do at Concordia, right? Is not set God and faith against science, mm-hmm. but to show how those really work together. And so Bram Stoker in, I think it's 1896 or something, is already dealing with this kind of problem. And Van Helsing talks about how he's a man of science, but there's a greater truth. And that's what motivates them. That's what holds them together, is their faith in God. And of course, it's exciting and there's adventure.
Thank you. I feel like I just sat in your class. How fun. So thanks for giving us a glimpse at two books that you really enjoy and explaining to us why. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And I didn't know about Dracula, so I might have to go check that out now. More the, you know, popular pop culture references. But yeah, I will definitely be checking that book out. And to kind of dovetail off of that, which we touched on a little bit, but is there a mantra or a favorite Bible verse or motto that you live by that you'd like to share?
I don't think I can say that I live by them. I try to live by them. It would be nice if I could, if I was that strong. One is from the Beatitudes, where Jesus talks about, don't worry about tomorrow, right? That even God knows all the sparrows. He counts the hairs on your head, right? And so don't worry about tomorrow. I wish I could do that. I try to hold on to that. I believe that God is taking care of me, but it's often hard to let go of that, right? Mm-hmm. And then kind of connected to that is one that's more recent that I've been thinking about, is from the Psalms. I look to the hills, that's where my help comes from, right? That instead of looking into myself, that I have a problem, so I need to find that solution myself. That you need to look to God. And I think some of us do that really easily for certain things. Like if your child is ill, you turn to God. You don't think about it. But for instance, there's a problem at work. Do we often think, oh, I should take this to God in prayer as well? And so I've been trying to do that more and more, that idea that I'm not the answer. I don't have the solution, that I need to look to God, to look up and away from myself to find the solution.
And those, wonderfully stated sentiments definitely flow nicely into our next question. But if you could look back and give your younger self a piece of advice, what would that be?
Patience. Be patient. I did not get married until I was 41. I did not have my children until I was 43 and 47. I spent a lot of time being anxious and dating people that maybe weren't the best choices for me. And then realizing that, but just, if, you know, that family that I'd envisioned since I was a little girl, like that had always been part of sort of my, what I was going to do when I grew up, right? That God had a plan for that. And it meant that I had to wait till I was 41 to get married. So patience, that's what I would tell myself. It's all going to work out. Don't try to find the solution by yourself.
So our last question for you today is, describe a pivotal time in your life, either personal or professional, that changed the way you approach a work-life balance.
And I don't know that I have a work-life balance, to be very honest. And part of that has to do with my original job. So when you're a teacher of any kind, whether that's, you know, K through 12, college, your job comes home with you.
Very true.
Right? If it was all just in the classroom somehow magically, that would be really wonderful, right? But you have to prep for the classroom and you have to grade after the classroom. And so it's really hard to separate, right? You have to bring the papers home to grade. Maybe I could do that in the office from 9 to 5, but I'd be physically uncomfortable. I like being on the couch, right? I like having my papers around me. I like being, you know, so that it just kind of weaves in. And so you have to learn. And again, my first 10 or so years here, I was single. So it didn't matter if I took stuff home to do, right? It wasn't interfering with anything else. So one thing is that learning, right? That when your child comes in and needs something, do they really need it? My favorite statement is, wasn't your father in the same room with you and you came here to ask me when he's literally next to you?
Yeah.
I'll deal with this. And over time, I think I've trying to teach myself that, yes, they need it, whatever it is. Like it doesn't have to be something major, that they need my attention. And that means that whatever I'm doing can be put away, or maybe I just need two more minutes, right, to finish it right now, or to send out the email that really does need to be answered right now, to spend time with them. So, and to allow yourself to do that, to not feel, that's the other thing, is you feel guilty in either direction, right? At first, mm-hmm. I felt guilty about not spending enough time with my family. Now, sometimes I feel guilty because maybe I should be doing this project right now, as opposed to being with my family. And so it's tough. My father wanted me to be an accountant like he was, because he didn't take his job home. He went to work. He did his accountancy. Closed the books and came home. And there are days when I was like, boy, I should have been an accountant. Because the separation is so neat. It's really hard in education to make that separation. And so maybe, again, advice back to my slightly younger self, is that people always come first and the job will get done.
Yeah, those are great reminders for all of us as we all strive to find that balance and probably never meet it perfectly on either side of that spectrum. But thank you for the encouragement and the thoughts, because it's definitely valid, all of that. And you have woven in so many wonderful extras for all of us. But as we conclude our interview, is there anything else you'd like to share or add as your Concordia community gets to know you a little bit better? We know you, but you know, anything we don't know.
I think I just want to say something about the Concordia community as a whole. Mm-hmm. So on the day I interviewed and I was at faculty coffee, we used to have faculty coffee 4 days a week. I missed that. But on the day I interviewed, Dale Hartman, who was the librarian at the time, came over to me and he said, I've worked at many places, but I want you to know this is the best. Everyone is so great and so nice here. I was like, okay, I was impressed with that. And it's true. It has remained true for the 25 years I've been here. And what that means, though, is not only are my best friends my colleagues, right? These are the people mm-hmm. I met. But that I can have a disagreement about something work-related, and that ultimately is not going to ruin the relationship I have with that person. Mm-hmm. Right. So we can be diametrically opposed about the way we want to do something, but at the end of the day, the relationship takes precedent. And I don't know if people who have not worked at other places, if they've only worked at Concordia, they need to realize how unique that is. When I was in graduate school, I was a Shakespearean in graduate school, and I had two professors who would not talk to each other. And so I couldn't let the other one know I was working with the other one. I mean, it was insane. That kind of atmosphere is just toxic, right? And we just have this amazing, the love of God really does permeate our interactions. And it doesn't mean that we always agree with each other. It doesn't mean we say, oh yeah, you're absolutely right. But it means that ultimately our Christian brotherhood and sisterhood is what holds things together. And I hope that the students feel that too. I think they do. I've had a lot of people who visit the campus and say, wow, it was different from any other campus I visited. Mm-hmm. And just to be, we should all be just so grateful for what we have at Concordia, what God has provided for us.
Wonderful. I love that. And I've enjoyed this time with both of you, my sisters in Christ and my colleagues. And so I know everyone else, when they hear this interview, is going to enjoy it just as much. Thank you so much, Carrie. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It was great talking to you.
This has been Concordia University Irvine's Advancing Women Leadership Podcast. Thanks for listening and have a blessed day.